Hey everybody, this is Justin Case. I'm your host of Case in Point. This is episode 36, and today is going to be a great episode. We're going to be doing some catch up, and Mr. Jody Yearden is with Ponch and I tonight after quite a hiatus there. And this is going to be possibly a hodgepodge episode because there's a lot of things that we want to get caught up on, and Jody probably has a lot of things he wants to share. So we're going to shoot from the hip tonight. I'm not going to lie to you. There's a lot of things going on in the summertime. I'm back from vacation, and that was a great trip. But there's really not much to tell with that because I kind of just went to a sleepy beach town and, whatever. You know, got to sleep in. That was a highlight of my tenure there. So anyway, hey, guys, I'm glad you're here. Jody and Ponch, how are you guys doing tonight?
Yeah, I'm good too. I am well. I'm glad to be able to join you guys tonight.
Yeah, we're glad you're here. How you doing, Ponch?
I'm good. I was telling you earlier this nasty eastern heat's kind of gross with the humidity and stuff. But
yeah,
the past few days has been fairly tolerable with the low humidity and stuff. But tomorrow, heat's going to go back up, and I'm afraid the humidity is going to go back up, so it's going to be kind of, it's going to be gross.
Cool. Well, there's our weather report, everybody. Hey, Jody, so, no, I'm just kidding. No.
Yeah.
we should have a weather segment like when we started off. Oh, that's great. Yeah, fortunately, where I live, we don't have the humidity in the desert here, so. And I've come to really appreciate that. Like when I go over to New York and to visit you guys, or at least Jody, Ponch and I have not seen each other in person since 2003.
Wait, really?
Wow.
Yes, it's been 15 years.
Holy crap, I didn't think it was that long.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was summer, it was June of 2003.
And man, we gotta fix that.
We gotta fix it, man. It's more than a squeaky wheel. I tell you,
this thing is rusted by this point.
Yeah, so I think we're going to, in the future, folks, and I'm not being overly optimistic here, I see this as reality, Ponch and I are going to meet up at some point, and we're going to go to the New York Comic Con, and we're going to join forces on a weekend and do some recon and do some report back of what we see at Comic Con. So, that being said,
hey, I went to a Comic-Con last weekend.
So what Comic-Con did you go to, buddy? Let's hear all about it.
That was quite an unintentional segue. I appreciate that.
Like I said, we're shooting from the hip, you know? That's what we do. You know, we get lucky sometimes.
Yeah, and I was wondering how I went, too. I was supposed to go with you guys, but yeah,
yes.
I
kind of...
Is that Salt City? Was it Salt City?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, yeah. We went to the Salt City Con at Destiny USA in Syracuse, New York. And, how do I put this? I think it really depends on what you are personally looking for in a con. There's probably 50 vendors.
You're getting conned at the con?
a few very mid-level celebrities. Like, they had Skull from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers of Balkan Skull. I don't know how familiar you guys are with
him. Oh, my
Power Rangers, really? But Skull was there, yes.
Is he the little short guy? He's a shorter guy?
Yeah, he's a skinny guy, yeah. He was the comic relief.
He was at Spokane like a month ago. He literally made eye contact with me and gave me this stink eye for some reason. I'm like, what did I do, dude? You know? I'm just a husky guy with a Imperial hat on his head.
Hey, don't you know when you make contact with B-level celebrities, that's an automatic $20 right there, man.
Well, guess what? It didn't work on Richard Grieco. Not going to work on him. Anyway, Jody, go ahead.
B-level, very generous for the celebrities at this con. They had two of the guys from Broken Lizard Comedy Troupe, who did the Super Troopers movies. There was a couple of guys from that troupe.
Oh, wow.
And they were not the heavyset guy. Or the guy that directed the movie. It was like the two, like the bottom feeders of the group.
Oh boy. Well, what else they got going on, you know? Yeah.
The less funny guys.
As long as there's a hot lunch, they'll show up, right? That's what Jody
was. Probably the most impressive celebrity there. Well, Kevin Nash was there as well. Professional wrestler. professional wrestler slash super shredder, Kevin Nash. He was there on day he was there on day two, so I didn't see him. But Goldust was there the day that we went, and actually, when we showed up, he was either at lunch or he was at a panel. So I didn't
see him either. Vacant booth. You know he's there, but he's nowhere to be seen. You want to know why? Because he's the natural. He's the natural. They call him the natural. Awesome. Yeah.
So he wasn't around either. So that was pretty. There was a stunt lady from Black Panther was there.
Big deal.
It was, as far as celebrities go, I thought it was not like the greatest set list of celebrities. The way that this con was set up is Destiny USA is a very large mall in Syracuse, one of the bigger malls.
It's
in the
a
country,
mega mall. It's huge. Yeah.
Right. So half of it was in the mall. And there was a walkway across the street to the Embassy Suites that was across the street. So half of it was in the hotel, and half of it was at the mall.
That's impressive.
So like the celebrity portion was at the mall, and your vendors and stuff were at the hotel, and actually there were some other food trucks and a few vendors and stuff in the parking lot. I would say there was at least 50 to 60 vendors. However, I was really underwhelmed by it, but it really depends on what your motive is to be there. If you like cosplay or you like people that sell I'm trying to think.
Like t-shirts and stuff or
You know what? I didn't even see a lot of that. There was some prints. Dave Dorman was there who did a lot of the Dark Horse Star Wars comics back in the 90s, Dark Empire.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Signing some prints, signing some stuff. he was there. It really depended on what you were looking for.
Right.
Me personally, I go to comic conventions for comics, and out of the 50, 60 vendors, there were 4 vendors that were selling comics.
That's ridiculous.
You know what? There was 5 vendors that were selling comics. There was another guy that was out in the hall, and
he's just out in the hall.
He had a make your own price sort of thing, and I that's ended up going back there.
How does that work?
So 5 vendors were selling comics, and one of them was the shop that was putting on the show. So of course they were there. They literally picked up their comics out of their shop and just took them downstairs to the show.
Really easy. Yeah. They probably use the elevator. Hey, fill up this cart full of comics.
They did.
Four trips.
We went in there looking for Batman and Superman comics, and they were already gone because they'd taken them to the show. So if you wanted them, you had to go down to the show to get them.
Right. Wow.
So
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I was just say quickly that I find it weird because in my experience, smaller cons, I tend to find more vendors that deal with comics. So the fact that this show, obviously it's a smaller show, that they don't have any vendors selling comics, I just find that really odd.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. I think they're trying to make this a much bigger deal because, to be honest with you, the next closest convention would be, there's one in Buffalo, there's one in Albany, there's a few that have popped up in the last few years, but this is really the only one within one that they're really making a decent effort at, within maybe a 2-hour driving range. So it's really covering a lot of ground. They're really trying to make it into something, but it's very telling. I know Syracuse itself has around, I think, probably four or five comic shops, and this was the only one that had a booth there, was the one that was that had organized it, which to me is kind of telling that when the other local vendors are not on board and don't set up a booth there, and actually if you go to their shop after the show, as I did, and the guy's talking crap about them, that kind of says a lot, I think, to the organizer. So it was, like I said, it depends on why you're going to a show. I went for comics, and I spent more to get in than I did on comics. It cost me $20 to get in. And I think I spent $20 on comics. And
that's pretty light for you, usually trying to fill in some gaps, and usually probably, I mean, would you say you're like $80 to $100 range typically, or are you kind of getting down worried like you don't have to spend that much anymore?
Yeah, it's about 50. I know what I want. I've got enough stuff that I've got that I'm like, not that I'm trying to get stuff that I really want or stuff that I'm a Bronze Age collector at this point, so I'm trying to fill in stuff from like the 70s and 80s that I'm like, hey, that's pretty neat.
Those are the
I don't
best.
See that every day.
Yeah, those are the best area. Yeah.
And essentially, there were 5 comic book vendors, and I only bought something from 2 of them. And I was at those tables for the majority of the time that we were there. One guy had like some like $4 and $5 books that were like 3 for $12. That I was able to get some a couple. What did I get? An issue of Detective, so a Firestorm book. And another guy had a bunch of dollar books that were like 70s and 80s books, and I picked up a whole bunch of late 70s DC War books, which I'm really excited to check out.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you guys something. Now that you're both on the show tonight, I, in my travels, and I would say probably since I really started looking at older comic books again, because the new ones suck really bad, I decided I was going to start going back to my roots, so to speak, not to sound cheesy or cliche, but I go to these shows. I went to a swap meet up in Packwood, Washington. It's literally this biker fest up in the woods. And I'm not a biker. I don't have a Harley. I don't have any leather and studs outfit or buttless chaps. I don't have anything.
But, yeah, if this is going to be a question on Easy Rider back issues, I don't have a Harley.
I went up there, and all I saw were 90s comics. I'm like, I don't want these. You could, and the thing is they're starting to charge. Now, am I insane, or has the world gone insane for comic books? Where, put it this way, Ponch. Do you want to get the first appearance of Cardiac and pay $50 for it?
That's not even worth $10, man.
That's
my
what
goodness.
We're looking at, folks. Over here in this neck of the woods, you go to a comic show or you go to a swap meet or something, they are commanding top dollar. And you know why it is? I'm starting to see more graded comic books. You could have a graded comic book and of some B-list character no one even cares about or has heard of unless you're a hardcore and you know, oh yeah, that guy. You know, he's always in the back of the comics. It's like, oh yeah, the first appearance of the Prowler. I'm going to pay $30 for a graded comic of that. But that's what I'm seeing.
You know,
I'm seeing like all this stuff, like New Warriors, and I mean, hey, I like Mark Bagley, but that's the only reason why I would pick up a New Warriors comic. But it's like that's the kind of stuff I'm seeing, like this '90s 50-cent bin fodder that 5 years ago. Now they're starting to sell these for even $2 or $3 a piece. It's ridiculous.
I think. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jody.
You go first. Go first, Jody.
I have noticed that, too. I really think it depends on what it is. I believe, like, Batman, and in particular, from what I've noticed, I'm a 50-cent bin digger.
Yeah.
Stuff that used to go for a quarter and 50 cents, like Batman issues, Spider-Man issues, I think maybe some X titles. Some of that stuff is starting to go, I guess, as time, it's been almost 30 years now. As time has gone on, that stuff is starting to go in the $1 to $2 to $3 range. Interestingly enough, you know, you just mentioned the Cardiac thing. There's a shop. It was a shop I actually went to after we left the Comic-Con and went and dug through some 50-cent bins and actually bought a huge stack of stuff. This guy just put on his Facebook page yesterday. Do you guys remember the Venom Lethal Protector miniseries?
Yeah, that was excellent. Yeah. Mark Bagley, holographics cover. Yeah, I have those.
It's got a red foil cover.
Yeah.
Can you believe that is a $20 book?
I just saw that. And it's probably because of the movie, right? The movie's getting some...
I'm assuming from the movie, yes. Yeah.
Which is it's a great series in its own right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I've noticed lately, I might have mentioned like a previous episode where I kind of keep track. There's a website that's kind of like a eBay comic auction aggregator, like, and you're able to filter the type of searches. Like, you can search, like, you know, where are the top selling Bronze Age comics, let's say, So, and personally, in my my comic collection, I don't have, I don't think I even have any Bronze comics or Bronze Age comics, if any at all. Maybe a few, but not much. So, a lot of my stuff tend to lean more towards, like, early 90s on and stuff, because that's about the time I started reading and stuff. Well, more hardcore. But it seems like lately, just from what I gather from that, and just, like, some speculator websites and stuff, or just like word of mouth from like the comic community here in New York, it seems like a trend now is speculating on first appearances on almost any type of character, like what you're talking about with Venom. Well, actually, that's not his first appearance, obviously, but because of the movie, and I guess because the plot of the Venom movie is somehow loosely based on that Lethal Protector storyline, that drives the price up. Or like Cardiac, or he might have a minor cameo in the next Spider-Man movie. That'll drive the price up. So it's like people are looking for like first appearances of characters you would never consider would be valuable. And now that all, like, it might seem like the heavy hitters have been sought out and found out, now they're looking for like the B-listers and, you know, like,
yeah, and
Chameleon.
Yeah.
What's his first appearance? Let's look for his stuff now. And, well, he might have a cameo in this movie. Now let's drive the price up way more than it ever was before. Because I think with, like, Spawn, I've been seeing with, like, Spawn number one,
right,
that's been, like, dollar bin fodder for as long as I can remember. And now, like, yeah, even, like a direct edition is, like, in $15, $20 range now. And, like, newsstand is, like, higher than that. So it's really weird how that's working out now.
Yeah, well,
and like,
the print runs are starting to disappear because, like, Jody and I we've texted each other on things, and we've probably alluded to it several times on the show here, was that before you had this insane amount of print runs in the 90s and the late 80s, and now those, even in the mid 80s, now those copies are starting to disappear. They've been thrown out. They've been just starting to, maybe the ones that are considered very fine grade or fine are starting to become harder to get, and it's driving the price and the demand up as well.
Right. A lot of these shops, I mean, if you're talking about things, well, even as far back as, like you're saying, like Spawn number one, that's 92, you're talking about
26
stuff from
years,
the 80s and 90s, there are not many shops that have been in business that long, much less would still have
good
copies
point
of this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's a lot, you know, unless somebody brings in a collection to sell, the stuff is kind of, even though they had giant print runs, this stuff is just, unless you get on eBay, it's kind of getting harder and harder to find. Like you said, it's people didn't preserve them as well, or maybe they've been water damaged, or the store's gone out of business, or storage someplace. So even something that had some ginormous print run in the 80s, like, I don't know, 200,000 copies, they're all getting harder and harder to find. You know, I was just saying that the shop I went to that has the Lethal Protectors books for sale, I found a, like you said, everything is speculatory, everybody's first appearance is worth something. I was going through the 50-cent bin, and I found the first appearance of Vibe from a Justice League of America comic, and Vibe is a character on the Flash TV show. So this throwaway dollar annual from 1983 is now a $10 to $15 to $20 book. And I happened to find one in the 50-cent. I already had one anyways, but I found one in the 50-cent bin, and I fished it out, and I'm hoping to sell it.
And do you also think that because there's more stuff that's actually put in trade, that it has affected the rarity of the overproduced books? Do you guys think that is a factor? Or maybe not so much?
I think it depends on how popular the character is, because my mindset is, if, I mean, even though you may have, like, a first appearance of a character in a comic, and that might be, I mean, just like, as a general example, it might be worth something. I always had the mindset that if the character is popular enough where it warrants a trade, like, printed, like, let's say a half a year after their initial first appearance was printed, in my mind, I would assume maybe that's the point where, like, their first appearance will start cooling down a little bit, because there's like, even though it's a trade, there's a lot more printed material of that character being distributed.
Right.
Whereas if it were, whether, or maybe, you know, that's my thought, my thinking, but maybe the character is so popular that whether it has the first appearances, you know, however many copies it's been printed or issued, and the, all of a sudden it has like a trade paperback, that might not even matter at all. But in my mind, I would always assume there's a trade soon after, it might diminish the value. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe that's my thought, but...
Well, let me throw something else
maybe
at
it
you
does,
guys.
Maybe it doesn't.
Well, a prime example of this would be, well, at least in my mind, would be the Infinity Gauntlet. You know how, like, now you can go into a Barnes & Noble or whatever, and you know, because of the movie, the Infinity War movie, you'll see these on the shelf now. They actually started printing more graphic novels, like reprints of, you know, those overproduced comic books.
Yeah, maybe, you know. It could be, too, that, like Infinity Gauntlet is a perfect example. Like, maybe it's gone to, I don't know for sure, but I'm just, you know, kind of like spitballing. Maybe it's gone to the point, kind of like with Watchmen, that you see more graphic novels and trade paperbacks now than you would have like single issues.
Right.
So if you wanted to go to like any comic shop, it's pretty easy to find a trade of Watchmen or Infinity Gauntlet. But if you're looking for single issues, maybe it's that much harder because it's so, like, the trades are so easily available now.
Yeah.
So maybe that might drive
right.
single issues up too.
Right. And that's what I was getting at. There's gotta be some kind of consumer factor there with that. Cause I mean, I can honestly tell you, I mean, guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but nobody gave a crap about cosmic characters before the Marvel comic universe showed up.
No.
Nobody cared. These were comic books that would just collect dust. It'd be right there with the Fish Police, okay? And Slapstick. Nobody cared.
Hey, don't talk smack about Slapstick.
Like, hey, I like Slapstick.
I do, too. I'm just saying. He wasn't, like, a serious A player.
No.
Yeah. I gotta get some of those. Maybe I don't.
No. 2 years ago, Fudge, maybe, like, I want to ask your opinion on this. Because Infinity Gauntlet number one, I went to a show in the spring, I think it was March, and this guy had I think Infinity Gauntlet number one. This is before the movie came out. That was a $20 to $25 book. I gotta imagine at this point it's probably a $30 or $35 book. 2 years ago, before, you know, they announced the plot of the Avengers and it was going to be called Infinity, you know, Infinity Gauntlet, how much do you think an Infinity Gauntlet number one, what kind of value would you have put on that book before the Avengers movie?
Before it was announced, or?
Yeah, like, what would you think? That's like a $5 book, maybe a $10 book at the most?
I wouldn't even give it that much.
Honestly, I think 5 to 10 before the announcement, I think was a fair price, because my thinking is, even if it wasn't made into a movie, it's still such a popular mini,
right.
like crossover miniseries,
right.
that I mean, again, going back to like the whole speculative market aspect of comics now, like if you hear like say like I have a comic where when Thor Ragnarok was announced, you know, it was gonna have elements of like the whole Planet Hulk storyline, and that drove the price of like the first appearance of that storyline up and stuff. But then like the movie came out and then the prices cooled off, whatever. But so I think even if they never made an Infinity Gauntlet comic, my guess is it probably wouldn't be warranting the prices it's warranting now, but because of the fact that it's such a popular miniseries, and at least on Marvel's end, it was like the first major one where involved, like you're saying, Justin, like the cosmic characters, and brought it to like the limelight that it did. I think it would still be a popular series that it was still warrant a decent amount, but you know, obviously, since the movie came out, it drove the prices up, so it became even more popular.
Agreed.
Because of that fact, so.
It wasn't a $20 book, but it wasn't a throwaway book either. It was like a five. That's about where I had it picked, like a $5 to $10 book, because it has gravity to it. That was back when we didn't have crossovers, three crossovers a year. That was a that was really what, like, the second really big crossover after Secret. I mean, you had pre-Skrull War and what, like Atlantis. What was the Atlantis crossover that they had in Marvel? But you know, aside from Secret Wars, this was really the second really big crossover they had. And if even somebody with like a passing interest of Marvel had probably heard of the Infinity Gauntlet crossover at some point. Mm-hmm. So that's about what I was thinking too. But we went to this show and Jim Starlin was there, who wrote Infinity Gauntlet, and boy, he had a huge lineup. He had a huge lineup signing copies and stuff. And
yeah,
it was something to see.
Do you think now, here's what, something for you guys to think about. Do you think it was what percentage of that line would you say are money grabbers? They're like, sign this, I'm going to sell it on eBay.
I think a fair amount were, because there were people that were like, yeah, I think I overheard a guy was buying books from was like, yeah, I just sold, I think it was an Infinity Gauntlet number one, I just sold it for $25 to this. No, there was this dirtbag that was haggling. That's what it was. He was haggling for an Infinity Gauntlet number one, and he was really trying to get the guy to come down on his price. Take 20. Maybe he was asking 30, and he went down to 25, but this guy wanted to pay 20.
They're haggling over pennies, essentially, really.
Well, he had to go borrow money from his friend, which was even more like, I don't have the money, but my buddy does.
It's all about priorities.
He's going to go have Jim Starlin sign it. And Starlin was charging $5 an autograph, too.
That's cheap.
I can't fault these guys, especially writers. It's very hard for some of these guys. When you're an artist, you know, you can do prints, you can do things, and that's one thing. You can make a little bit of money on the side. But when you're a writer, it's very, unless you're selling scripts, I don't really think there's a huge market for that stuff. So it's hard for these guys. And, you know, you get these. I didn't get any signatures from Starlin this time, but we got signatures from him. Oh, he was there probably 6 or 7 years ago.
Well, they're the men behind the curtain, really. I mean, that's what they are. I mean, it's...
Right. He was signing for free then, and, you know, it's, they get an appearance fee to come to this stuff, but I can't fault the guy at all. He's not really getting a huge...
Right.
He's not getting huge residuals from Marvel for basically helping create, you know, having a big imprint and putting the blueprints out there for one of their biggest films. So any way he can make money, would go for it. So, yeah, he was... I think, like you said, I think some of it was money grabbers, but those Infinity Gauntlet comics were just something you would expect to see in a dollar bin someplace, and
they're
pretty hot item now.
Well, not only that, like, you also have like the Infinity Crusade, and then you have, what is there, like three main trades for that stuff now, and there's
War.
Yeah, there's Infinity War and Infinity Crusade.
Infinity Watch. Nobody needs to read that one.
No, and then there was an Infinity Watch following after that, which is garbage, too.
Oh, boy, I forgot about that one.
maybe I should have never mentioned it then.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's nothing like the, what's the Acts of Vengeance crossover that they did in, like, the, it's so lame. I was like, what is the point of this?
That was the one with, like, Darkhold Redeemer.
Yes,
and...
I think that was, yeah. Acts of Vengeance.
Terror Inc. Inc. I think made an appearance. I have more parts of that than I care to admit.
So do I.
Number one.
Yeah.
Morbius number one. The Morbius poster.
Yep. There you go. Yeah. And man, those Morbius comics were gross. They were morbid. It was nasty. Yeah. So I wish I could go to more Comic Cons this year, because they're quite entertaining. And now that my son's old enough, he's like my partner in crime now. He wants to go everywhere with me, and it was great being able to go to some of these. And he gets to see the Star Wars characters dressed up like movie quality costumes. I mean, that's worth it for me. And they don't even charge you anything to get pictures with them. They're just fans too.
Right.
It's awesome. Like I said on a previous episodes we had about, you know, my adventures up there in Spokane, it was like, you know, as far as the comics are concerned, I have an eye where I'm able to just scan quickly. And if I see something that catches my eye, great. But if not, I just keep walking, because the conventions over here are far different than the ones on the East Coast. And I think it's number one, the East Coast has, as opposed to the Northwest, the population is much greater. There's more availability of maybe some older books at a larger quantity than it would be up here because it's kind of isolated. Because that Lilac City Comic Con is the only inland convention up here. So, and I think it's stupid they call it that. Just call it the Spokane Comic Con, you know? But they changed it, you know? It's like, it's like, what are you guys, what is your main platform? You guys selling air fresheners up here? Jeez. And, but anyway.
Maybe they are.
Yeah, well, that was not evident when I was there. I smelled a lot of body odor.
Yeah. I think that's a given when you go to a Comic Con, no matter how big or small it is.
It's there. And you know what? It's like, they should just, those guys, they smell so bad, they should just duct tape sticks of deodorant under their arms so it's a constant feed into their pores.
I was fortunate. I only got one real bad whiff of BO, and then another guy, like, he got very close to me to get into some long
boxes. Pardon my reach.
He let out one very deep exhale, and it smelled like he hadn't opened his mouth since, like, probably 2014, maybe? Yeah, his breath was pretty ripe.
How was that turd sandwich, buddy? You know?
He had a foot long.
So gross.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me, yeah, you know what I should do for the next Comic-Con? I think she was talking about, like, New York Comic-Con, because obviously since this is a bigger show, the ratio of BO is much more greater. So she was saying, you know, maybe I should just go to a dollar store, buy out their entire inventory of toothpaste and soap, and just give them out for free. Set up a booth at Comic-Con, just give them out for free.
You know what
and
work?
They'll probably pay me money for it.
If you would, right, because what you could do, you could take the labels off, and you put, like, go and have a bunch of things printed up ahead of time, go buy the deodorant and take them to the con, and put, like, Moss Man on there, or put on, like, Eternia Fresh, or something like that, or something comic-related, you could make a killing.
Yeah, man.
See, I just gave away an idea for free. Maybe I should edit that out because now I'm giving away my meal ticket. Anyway.
Yeah, soap's copyrighted by Case in Point Bot Podcast.
Thank you. We got all the legal bases. Yeah, the legal bases are covered. Yeah.
You had mentioned your displeasure with the, you know, your Comic-Con experience you had gone to. I'm at this point, I'm kind of thinking maybe, for me personally anyways, maybe what I'm, and I think that, a lot of these smaller shows, and nothing, no faulting them at all, but I think they're trying to go for more of the, you know, the San Diego or the New York experience.
It's where the money is.
And that's where the money is. They're trying to bring the big show to a smaller venue and working with what they have. So I can't fault them for that, because if they had made this show that I went to last weekend, if they'd made it all comics, nobody would have shown up. You have to, have to bring stars. You have to bring in cosplayers. You have to bring in, like, toys. You have to bring in wrestling stuff. You have to bring in Greg the Hammer Valentine, which they did.
I'd be all over that, man. Yeah.
And that chick from Saturday Night Live.
I tried to get a picture of him, right? He was sitting there. He was eating a sandwich. I was trying to get a picture of him.
Oh, man.
And somebody walked in front of me. Somebody walked in front of me, and I was trying to get another one, but I didn't want him to see me because he had another guy that was with him. And I thought, boy, if I get an unsolicited picture of him, he's going to beat the crap out of me. It was not worth the risk.
He's wicked tough. Yeah, he'll give you like an axe handle.
That was with him.
Yeah.
There was another guy that was with him that I guess was some wrestler. But if you're a wrestler and I've never heard of you, then that's that's not good. And that's what this guy was. But he was probably only like 50 years old and a little more spry than the Hammer. And this guy would have beat the crap out of me. And I was not willing to take that risk.
Did I ever tell you guys about that story where I kind of met Peter Mayhew at a New York Comic Con years ago?
Oh, I remember that story. I remember the story.
No,
but
I don't
think
I've ever heard.
Yeah,
it.
I remember it, but it's because it's awesome. So you tell it for the show, Pat. This is great.
All right. So, again, this was like, I would say, the second or third New York Comic Con. So at this point, that show, it was starting to grow, but it wasn't big enough for it. It was like rivaling San Diego Comic Con. So the celebrity artist alley, celebrity alley, I guess you want to call it, didn't have like the top celebrities as you would like now. And this was still when I would have to say, I think Episode 1 had not... No, actually, I take that back. I think episode 2 or 3... I think Revenge of the Sith had not come out yet, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember.
So
time
was it
life.
2005 or pre-2005? That's an episode 3.
Actually, no. It was after that.
Okay.
It was after that. It gotcha. Was like 2007, 2008. So, yeah, not even mentioning it. Maybe it was after Revenge of the Sith. But for some reason, you had... Well, I think whatever day I was at this particular moment... there weren't a lot of people at the celebrity signings. I mean, you had, like, Gary Coleman and Ray Park, and, of course, you had, like, lines for those guys.
Sorry.
You know,
sorry.
But then there was, like, empty aisles where celebrities would be at because either the celebrities that were supposed to be in those aisles, either they were there for their allotted time and left, or they just didn't have enough scheduled to fill up those aisles. But... almost opposite the area of, like, say Ray Park was at, you had Peter Mayhew. And I was like, holy crap, this is freaking Chewbacca. How is there not a lot of people there? So, and Peter Mayhew, he was kind of, like, sitting, and he looked super bored. Like, he was kind of, like, slouched over in his chair, just kind of, like, looking at his table with all his unsigned prints, hoping somebody would come to his table and, like, ask him for something. And I don't know who this person was next to him. It was this lady, kind of heavy set. And I'm assuming that was maybe his manager or something. Right. I don't know.
It's a hired muscle. Sorry.
Yeah, probably. Well, maybe she was. Because as I stopped and I saw Peter Mayhew, and I was kind of like walking kind of closer to his table, but not really wanting to buy anything. I think he saw me. And his face kind of lit up, and he was like, oh, man, a freaking customer. This is great. Let me line up and try to sell him some signed stuff. And so I walked over to him, and he was like, hey, how you doing, man? What do you see here? What are you here for? Like, he was super, super nice, man. He just wanted to talk, have a nice conversation. Of course, he wanted to sell stuff, too, but...
Right.
I mean, like, I think it was, like, at this point, the whole aura of, like, meeting... these celebrities and movies, you know, I still saw them as like, holy crap, this is friggin' Chewbacca. Now it's like, nah, just Peter Mayhew, big deal. So my eyes were still like kind of glossed over, like, wow, it's Chewbacca, let me talk to him and stuff. And, you know, as we're talking, that I noticed this manager, beefy woman person, whatever she was kind of like standing at attention, just kind of like ready to strike for whatever reason. Huh. And, as the conversation went, I would ask him, so do you guys charge if I just want to like take a picture with you? I didn't really intend on buying something, but I mean, what's your price? And he was about to say something, but this woman just like took over the conversation afterwards. She goes, if you want signed stuff, that is this amount of money. If you want him to take a picture with your own camera, is this amount of money. And she just completely like ruined the entire conversation that I had with Peter Mayhew. He was like, man, B, why don't you just get out of the way, let us talk. Maybe if you allowed him to sell it to me, maybe I would have bought something.
There's
but
something,
she just completely
right.
killed everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it just turned me off to the point where I was like, well, if I wanted to buy something, I don't anymore. So I just kind of walked away, and as I was walking further away from his table, I saw Peter Mayhew like slouching back into his chair, like looking all depressed, looking at his table and stuff, and that woman was just kind of like looking over like, yeah, that's right.
She's like the granny. She's like Granny Goodness. She really is the one that's in control.
Yes. Yeah.
You know what the thing? The thing is, though, I noticed she's a handler. She is a handler. All these tables have somebody like that, and even Dirk Benedict's table had someone like that. But he was like so. That guy, his handler was so laid back and so he was not a threat at all. Now someone like Lou Ferrigno, he had a handler, but again, the guy was so benign and just kind of just there to help out, kind of thing. And
well, Ferrigno's kind of half deaf anyway, so he needs somebody on his deaf ear. So
sure, right.
No offense, Ferrigno.
No, none at all. I mean, that's what's going on. And he, you know, and it's bad enough anyway. The place was loud. There's a ton of people in there. It's hard to hear, even if you know you don't have any encumbrments in your hearing ability. And it's loud enough as it is. You got to be like, huh? Oh, okay, yeah, I'll see you over at table 4 or something like that. But these are handlers. These are people, they'll have a money box in front of them, or they'll be there to keep for some reason. And I don't, maybe some of the listeners know that if the Wither 2s and the Y4s of what these people are there for other than collecting money. Jody, you might even know, but there seems she's like some kind of an overlord figure from the sounds of it. Mm-hmm. And he, you know what I mean? He's just there, like hunched over, like he knows that's going to happen. And, mm-hmm.
and
you know,
I think that's what bothers me about that too. Like I was saying before, had the conversation just carried on the way it was going to, I think I probably would have bought something, like where I would have probably had a signed print by him, had him take a picture with me, and I would have been bragging about, yeah, I got Peter Mayhew's autograph here, but stupid wench ruined it.
And
so
she scared off.
I don't have a Peter Mayhew. Yeah, exactly.
So you know what I do is I'm a little more of a upfront. Hey, what do you charge? And I'll pay it. You know, I'm one of those kind of guys. Like, I don't ask if it's free or anything like that because I feel like a schmo. You know, so I tend to go and look at the and just say, all
well,
right, you know, I that's
to be,
that's
to
just
be fair,
me.
Though, that was a different time. That was like 15 right. years ago when they were, you know, taking a picture with a celebrity 15 years ago wasn't quite as big a deal as it was today. Some, like you said, at that time they would do it for, they might do it for free or for $5. Now they charge more for pictures than they do for autographs.
Yeah, that is a very good point, and that's precisely why at Ferrigno's table, I'm like, I'm not going to pay you money to use my phone, okay? I want 2 signed prints, high-quality glossy prints, and that was a better deal. It was like $60 for 2 prints or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, I have...
Yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm not going to charge them to use my phone. And what if the mm-hmm. file gets lost? I want something tangible to take back with me. You can't autograph my cell phone, you know? Jeez.
You know, I have noticed...
Well, you could.
I think it's kind of... I think it's kind of ridiculous, but I have noticed some celebrities... Well, I guess depending on how big a celebrity is, sometimes the... As long as you buy something, they don't care if you take a picture with your phone, but they...
Unless you're Pete Rose.
Yeah, well, he's on an entirely different level.
Well, Jody tell his Pete Rose story at some point.
Oh, man, yeah.
After you punch, so, have Jody tell his story about Pete Rose in Vegas.
Yeah, I want to hear this, actually, yeah.
Well, I went, I saw Pete Rose in person. I was at the Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas in 2006. it was crazy. I didn't know he was even going to be there. I'm walking through they have a mall in the hotel, and I'm walking through the mall, and it was just one of those crazy, you're walking through the mall, and there's a sports store, and just imagine you're walking, you go, oh my God, it's Pete Rose. Like, he's within like 15 feet of you, like, you didn't know he was going to be there, and you're like, what's he doing here? You didn't know Pete Rose is like, he's just sitting here, nobody's talking to him. He's just sitting outside the store. And I'm not a big autograph guy. I mean, like you said, if you get an autograph and they're like, oh, we'll throw the picture in for free, that's okay. I'd rather have a picture, I think, than an autograph. Because mm-hmm. it kind of, I don't know, for me, it captures, like, that's where I was. That's where I was at that moment, you know? So I went in there and I start looking at all the memorabilia. I'm like, oh, $65 for a ball, $100 for a picture, $200, like $120 for a bat. So I go and ask, like, his handlers there at the store, how much for a picture? Mr. Rose will take any pictures that you want with a purchase of a signed item. Okay, well, how much for just a picture? Mr. Rose will take any pictures that you want with the purchase of a signed item. So I'm, which means like you better buy something, you know, which was fine. I was like, and the cheapest thing that he had to offer was like $65 for a ball. And I had flown over. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. And conversely, if he had charged like $40 or $50 for a picture, I probably would have paid it. I was on vacation, so let the money flow freely. But I didn't need a signed ball, and I was turned off by the entire thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, thing is, too, with celebrity photos, a lot of times, they don't even bother to stand up. Like, so all I have to do is walk over next to you and pretend I'm putting my arm around you, and you get $50. Like,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
So easy. Like, there's no effort in it to that. It's a ripoff. So what?
No.
Let me just finish up here. So what I ended up doing was I waited till he was talking to somebody else, and so I pretended I was taking a picture of my wife. I go,
first perspective.
Yeah. So I said, I love you stand it. Here. I'm going to pretend I'm taking a picture of you, and I'm really taking a picture of him. So she stood there, and I. This is with like a disposable camera. So I took a picture of Pete Rose, anyways. And my favorite part about the whole thing is it's a really bad picture of Pete Rose. His eyes are closed and everything, and I was like, "Yep, that's how I want to remember."
His face is probably beet red. His face is always beet red, probably because from the drink, and his face is red as a rose.
He was in like mid-sentence, so he was talking, and his eyes were closed, but he was smiling because he was talking. He was buttering somebody up. So I'll have to see. I just saw it. I'll have to see if I can find it and not tweet it.
That'd be great. That would be awesome. Yeah.
You know, that was the best part of it. Like, well, I'm kind of happy that this was a terrible picture of him because I was kind of really put off by the whole thing. So,
now, question about that. Was this at like Caesar's Palace or whatever? Cause, it's funny you mention that because I also went to Vegas around, I would say, 2008, 2009, sometime around there. And, if it's the same place that you were talking about, I had gone with my girlfriend at the time, and we were just going to, like, we're kind of, like, hotel hopping, and seeing, like, you know how, like, each hotel has its own theme, and then within each hotel, there's, like, micro themes within each, so we
That's
had gone
we
to
see.
Yeah, so, yeah, we were doing the same thing, and we had gone to Caesar's Palace, and if it's the same sports shop that I think you're, was it near like some sort of like weird fountain where like every half hour there's some water light show going on there or something like that?
I think so. Yeah, it was just like a sports memorabilia shop, and it was all a bunch of signed, overpriced stuff. Yeah.
I'm sure. I had gone there and I saw this long line of people outside. I'm like, what's going on here? So, you know, of course, I want to find out. And come to find out, these people were standing in line for Dick Butkus. I was like, well, I don't know much about Dick Butkus. I just know he was, like, one of the hardest-hitting defensive guys back in the day. So, yeah, let's see what happens. So, I drag my girlfriend. We stand in line. And I find out that, well, I didn't know what I was trying to get in line for. I just wanted to, like, meet Dick Butkus. But, if you stand in line, the cheapest thing is like $60 for like an autograph 8x10, but you get to hang out with him for like 5 minutes. So I was like, oh, that's kind of neat, I guess. I mean, I've never done anything like that before, and since I'm in Vegas, you know, why not? So I'm waiting in line, and I guess like the proprietor of the store, he's like going outside and like meeting up with the people standing in line, and he comes up to me, and I'm not sure if I had a hat on or not. I don't think I did, but I guess from my accent, he's like, oh, so you're from New York, aren't you? What's your team? I said, well, Dallas, of course. He goes, man, you have no idea how many people I've met from New York that are Dallas fans. And I was like, thanks, I guess. That's cool. So so I'm still waiting in line, and I finally get to Dick Butkus, and the dude's a friggin' giant bear, man. Super sweet, super, super nice. His hands are ginormous, though, man. Like, he was, like, shaking my hand. I thought his hand ate my hand. If it was just the sign 8x10, again, that was the first time I had ever done something like that where I had, like, met an NFL legend. That would have been cool. But I actually spent about 5 minutes with the dude just randomly talking about stuff. And again, like, I actually told the guy, I know you're like a NFL legend, defense, blah, 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 whatever, but to be honest, I don't know a lot about your career to like say, yeah, this is my favorite game, blah, blah, blah. So he was like, well, what are you guys here for? He's like, well, this is our first time. We're just feeling it out, just seeing what's fun to do. He's like, well, me and my wife like to go to shows. If you go to such and such hotel at such time, you can catch this show. It's good. And this place also has good buffet and stuff. And it was weird because, like, I caught myself, oh, I'm talking to Dick Butkus about buffets and shows. And it has nothing to do with football at all.
Yeah, ask him to autograph your VHS copy of Legend of Sleepy Hollow. That's what I would have had him do. Anyway.
It might be worth something depending on the person.
If it
has a first appearance.
Yeah, if the cat hadn't gotten to it. Anyway, that's another story.
So, but it's just funny you mention that, because when you're saying Vegas sports shops, like, wait, that sounds awfully familiar.
Oh, yeah, so. Yeah. I'm sure it's the same place. And he goes to, I think he goes to Cooperstown every so. Doesn't he go to Cooperstown, too, and kind of loiter and hang out and try to get, I mean, he doesn't go to Cooperstown, but he hangs out, like, Hall of Fame weekends sometimes. Is it, yeah. Do I have that right? And, like, hang out at the shops. Like, he's not welcome in Cooperstown. Like,
he's not welcome.
He kind of makes him.
He's banned from the town.
Available in Cooperstown and just kind of shows up and signs autographs.
So does Virgil. Yeah. Virgil does, too.
In Cooperstown.
I wanted to mention, there was, I don't know who posted on Twitter, but somebody had made a mini diorama using the Virgil WWF figure. And it was a table, like, you would see it, like, at a Subway with, like,
the card
signed
table.
Autographs. And
yeah, the card table.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
Last year, I think we like, missed each other at the Cooperstown last year with Tim Raines and stuff, but that's the first time I ever went there for anything. Yes. And the buddy I went with, we parked far enough where we were able to walk through, I don't know the names of the street, but that one particular street where, like, all the restaurants and the bars and, like, the collectible shops are at. So we walked through there on our way to, like, where the outdoor ceremony was taking place. And I noticed there was, like, a bunch of dudes, like, guys that I don't recognize, like, old players. They would just, like, set up tables right in front of some, like, memorabilia shop and say, I'm Tim Tuffle, former outfielder for the Mets, signing autographs here, you know.
He stinks.
Yeah. So it wouldn't surprise me if people did the same thing, you know.
Right. Well, I did the same. I actually, when we went last year, we missed, I think Saturday had a lot of the guys, had more guys anyways, signing autographs. Mm. But we didn't get into town until Sunday morning. And it was less guys, but they still had a setup. Like you said, they're on the main street. And outside the CVS was like, I was getting my picture taken with Raleigh Fingers for a donation to the Cooperstown, like, volunteer fire department. Like, whatever your donation was, he was willing to... Now, an autograph was like $100. An autograph was like $100. But for, like, a donation to the fire department, you got your picture taken with them. So it was like $5. I thought, well, that was pretty neat. You don't take your picture with, like, a Cy Young winner every day, you know?
Yeah.
And then, but they had, like, expos and stuff, but those guys were there the day before. Yeah, I know what you mean. You're just walking along and you're like, oh my gosh, is it, I don't know, I can't think of any. There was a few other names that were there, but that was the only one that was in my price range was $5. Like, oh wow, look, it's Delano DeShields. What's he?
That was one of the guys that always brought up Delano DeShields.
I don't think he really was, but there were some experts that were there.
It was his 89 Topps rookie card. I thought I really had something. I got my Tom Gordon, I got my Rex Hudler, and my Delano DeShields. I'm set, you know.
Fuck, Kevin Mitchell, he's the man.
Yeah, Tim Stammen, too.
Nice. Yeah, Alan Trammell. Yeah.
You know, speaking of expos, I read this useless trivia a few months ago. Like, well, I guess when this current season started. What's his name? I'm sorry. Bartolo Colon. Yeah, he's the last remaining active player that played for the Expos.
Yeah. Yep. That's a pretty neat fact.
Yeah.
You know what? It's funny all this talk about Cooperstown. It reminds me of that episode of Everybody Loves Raymond where Raymond and Robert go to meet Art Shamsky. Robert wants to meet Art Shamsky. And he's like, and he used Ray to get him in because Ray's from, he worked for New York Newsday on the show. And he's like, yeah, I'm Ray Barone, New York Newsday. He's trying to get in ahead of the line. And the security guard's like, hey, what do you think you're doing, sir? You need to get back in line. No, you don't understand. I work for New York Newsday. Like that. So he tried to sneak up to the side of the table. Hey, Art, it says, you know who I am, right? Like, he's really trying to play that, and they end up getting kicked out. It's awesome. Hey, I want to meet Art Shamsky. I want to get an autograph of Art Shamsky. It's really funny. anyway.
Was that your first trip to... Did you go to the museum, Punch? Was that your first trip to the museum and to Cooperstown, or...?
Well, that was my first trip ever to Cooperstown, but unfortunately we didn't have enough time to go to the museum because it was kind of like a one-day trip where, like,
yes,
right. we woke up early enough to get there just when the ceremony was starting, and, you know, we walked to the ceremony afterwards. We ate at some restaurant where, for some reason, every single food item had to have some baseball-related name to it.
Yes.
That was kind of dumb.
That's stupid.
Triple play nachos.
Yeah.
Shortstop shortcake. Like,
home plate sliders.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like a total tourist here with this nonsense.
You know,
so.
The last time I was in Cooperstown was in the early 90s when the sports heyday was at its peak for sports cards, memorabilia, jerseys, pictures, you name it, starting lineup figures, comic books. I remember everything was so far out of my price range because I was only like 13 years old when I visited. And it was like, it was like, I don't remember a lot about it, but I remember going to Cooperstown and I was looking for the A League of Their Own, like, exhibits, and I was disappointed that there's nothing there.
They do have one there now, which is pretty neat.
Oh, see, I think what happened, like, when I was there, they're doing a bunch of remodeling and recirculation of the sets, and I think I was just there at the wrong time.
Well, they do things, too, where they, like, you know, they switch it up, because if it was the same museum now as it was 10 years ago, nobody would come.
Right.
And I know the last time I went, they actually did, I think it was just for the year, but they had a women in baseball exhibit, and they had a Rockford Peaches jersey, which was really cool.
Nice.
One that was, like... From the movie.
The Racine Bells?
Yeah, I think they had one for both of those.
Do they have autographed picture Marla Hooch? I really get put steam in my stride. I can't believe I pulled that out.
If I didn't tell you this, Punch... finding out, like, the next day or 2 days later that I must have walked right past you at some point, I was so disappointed that I didn't get to see you while I was there. I was disappointed.
Well, he has long hair now, though. You wouldn't have known him, because I think the last time you probably saw him, he had the Mace Windu thing going on.
Yeah, I think I had short hair at the time.
Come on.
Yeah,
my hair.
Yeah. My hair goes through phases, so. But,
well,
it's
there
funny
was also
cause...
what? Tens of thousands of people there, too. So unless you were really looking for somebody, you wouldn't know if you saw him. But it
you
was
had like the
true.
Yeah, you had like the Power Man 5000 thing going on for a while, Punch. The guitarist.
Yeah, that's a phase I wish to not remember. So
that's
yeah,
all right.
This was around the same time. I think this was during college, where at the time Jeff Bagwell. Yeah, the was he the first baseman of the Astros at the time, I think?
Yeah.
He had that weird, like, Lou Albano goatee going on. So freshman, sophomore year, like, my facial hair is kind of growing out pretty well. So I was like, you know, I want to try this. So I thought I had this Jeff Bagwell goatee going on, but it was more like a thin, wispy hair type of thing. And it just looked kind of weird, so I killed it as soon as I realized it was kind of not good at all. So that was probably the same Power Man 5000 period also. So, yeah, Jody, like, it was funny because I think you had posted a picture, you like tweeted a picture where it was you and your son sitting at some area on the lawn.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, but the weird thing is I could have swore I saw exactly that. I was like, wait. So Jody could have been sitting 5 feet in front of me.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, we were interviewed for the Montreal Gazette, and they got a picture and put us up on the website and all that. So I think I retweeted his tweet, and you're like, crazy. Hey, I was there too, and I
somehow Jody always ends up in a paper. He always ends up in the press somehow, whether it's due...
yeah, as long as it's not for like mopery or anything along those lines.
Yeah, right. But it's always like very pedestrian things, aside from the Hall of Fame thing. It's very pedestrian stuff he ends up being in the press for. Like, who would have thought? You know, it's like, here's Jody Yearden. He's purchasing his box of number 2B pencils or whatever, HB pencils from...
What do you feel about the direction of Dixon Ticonderoga this year?
He gets a whole interview out of it. That's the kind of stuff, you know?
Justin, are you referring to when NPR did a feature on me a couple
years
ago?
Yes! Yeah. Yeah, the NPR interview.
I never heard about this. What is this?
The lady showed up to his house.
Yeah, somebody from NPR came and interviewed me. They were here for, I don't know, 45 minutes?
Please tell.
Wow. It was a... Boy, we are really off the rails on this episode.
No, it's hodgepodge. I said it at the front. We're safe.
That is true. I'm trying to remember how on earth... So, somebody called me, like, you know how you get these random interviews? And this was probably 2016, so it was, like, right before the election. So somebody had called me for, like, a random, like, oh, do you mind taking a random survey? And it's, like, as long as it's less than 5 minutes or... You know, most of the time I will actually take those. I'm not a jerk to them. They're just trying to do their job. So they called me and they were like asking questions about the economy. And at the time they had like asked if I felt like I was like stuck in my job. And I was like, yeah. Like, would you mind talking to someone if they called you back? I said, yeah, sure. Well, they really did call me back like the next week. And they were like, well, we really like your story and we'd like to send somebody out to interview them. And I was like, oh, all right. So they did. And I was on, what the heck is it called? Like Market Watch, I think.
Yeah,
like
yeah, that sounds
like
right.
Like a five minute. I saved the link. It was like a 5 minute interstitial.
Wow.
It was like Market Watch Daily or something like that. And they came out and said, the segment they used for me was very brief, but they came out and I had to send them a picture and by my mail vehicle and send them a picture and they interviewed me for a while and used like, you know, like I said, they interviewed for a half hour and used a 10-second clip or something like that. But yeah, somehow I wound up on, I don't know if that went, I'm assuming that was on National Public Radio. So some botanist somewhere in Vermont was listening to me talk.
Part-time economist Jody Yurden. That's awesome.
I just found, oh my gosh, I just Googled for Jody, right? I just found a link. It's called ddtdigest.com. It has Jody Yearden, bubba@jisco.net.
Yeah, I had a whole email address circa like 19... Well, that was my dad's email address.
I remember, okay.
Circa like 1997, yeah.
I did an interview recently, and how he commented on how emotional it was for Flair to say he had lost... Oh, I gotta pull this up. Oh my gosh! I got to put this on the podcast page. Oh my gosh!
This was an old website that did Nitro reviews. If that tells you anything, WCW.
Yes, that's what it is.
2000. They've been out of business since 2001. Yes, I don't know. I wrote the guy about something.
Right. So it says I did the cached. This says Jody Yearden, bubba@jisco.net. Quote: Hacksaw Jim Duggan's new finisher, the knee drop. It makes Hogan's leg drop of doom look like a moonsault. This is gold, man. This is like 21. This is 21 years ago. We were in high school.
Oh my gosh,
this is the best. Oh man, this is one of the best episodes this year of this podcast. I gotta tell you, so far.
Jody, have you been hiding this like?
Oh, he's active.
Persona from us?
No, he hasn't hidden it from me. He is active. I just don't spread the word enough. This guy,
Justin,
he is poking around. He is poking around. He does it so much. I'm numb to it at this point. He does.
Man, but I've known you for how long? This is the first I've ever heard of this. You jerk.
Well, you know now. Now you know what you're up against. You know. This is.
Listen, I'm only allowed to call Justin a jerk. You're not allowed to call me a jerk.
Oh, you too, man. You too.
Oh, this is great. This is awesome. 16-year-old Jody comments. This is awesome. Oh,
wait, so what else? What else comes up when you search for him? Then.
Oh, let's see.
I don't know if it'll be. It used to be on there, but there used to be a thing that popped up from the Watertown Daily Times from like 1990. Where when we were in fifth grade, our fifth grade teacher made us write the McCormick Seasonings Company. Because they used to use these little balls for like decoration on the top of a cake. And they had like little bits of metal in them. I mean, this must have been her own personal agenda or something, because I can't, like, why would a 10-year-old kid care about any of that, you know? But she made us write the company to, like, change their formula so it wouldn't have real metal in it. And I remember they used my quote in the paper.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's great.
So maybe if you dig far enough, maybe you can find that.
You know, I remember there was an online forum, and it was a forum. It might still be around now, but it's a forum which regular schmoes that buy like guitars, amps, pedals, cables, whatever kind of musical gear, and you can post reviews on there. You post the review, it goes to some evaluation, and they put it up there. Well, I was very perturbed, because I'm a pretty good writer. That sounds very intelligent. But I'm good at doing write-ups on reviews for gear and things like that. And so I put it up on this forum. Someone had copied that paragraph and write-up I did and used it on their eBay page to sell the same amp that I reviewed. And I was flattered and ticked off at the same time.
Like Gene Siskel, like where they would take like the movie review and say like 5 stars. Like they took that and they used that as their eBay review, huh? Sell some. That's funny.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know what? You use my words. Once you give me a cut of your sale, there, buddy. If you sell it, it's because of me. You know. But anyway.
Yeah, I feel like I can't compete with you guys, because my only claim to fame that I can think of was do you remember that ice storm we had in Watertown, like back in, what, 96, 97, 98, whatever?
Ice storm 98.
Yeah, 98. Oh, yeah.
Well, I call it Wintergate. I called it Wintergate.
Yeah, whatever you want to call it. Whatever that was.
It was a great time. That's what it was.
No, it was glorious. We had like, what, a week and a half of school off at that time. So it was like a week and a half of playing with the snow. It was freaking fantastic. What sucked was where I was living at, we had lost power and heat.
So did we. Dexter, we did, and yeah. Jody was out in the land of time for God, out there in the fields, the frozen tundra. He had that filing cabinet full of comic books, and I was jealous, you know, because I knew he had all those comics to read. I didn't have anything, because I traded them to you for a pocket calculator.
Shut up, man. I didn't want to remember that.
He got the better end of the deal. He's still ashamed of it, because he got screwed.
Cardiac, why do I want comics with Cardiac, man?
Hey, man, it's a deal's a deal, fair and square. Anyway.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. But I remember this family that my, I guess, friend that was close to my father, the close family friend, I don't remember, they offered to let us ride out the rest of the ice storm with them, because they didn't have power, but they had naturally fed heat. So it was like nice and toasty in their place. So I remember, I think there was like a few trees that fell down from like the weight of all the ice being on the branches and stuff. So they wanted to clean up the front yard and stuff. So it was one or two of their kids. I think, yeah, one of their kids and myself and my little brother at the time. My father like forced us to help him. He was like, they're letting us stay here. Best we can do is have you go out and clean them. Like, well, what about you? You're bigger than me. He's like, I'm taking care of stuff. You go out with the son. It's like, all right, fine, whatever. So I'm like helping clean up, and it just so happens around that time, like I guess we had been going at it for like an hour, and as a kid, an hour of hard, you know, manual labor, that's a long time. So I had to take my break. I had my hands on my hips, just kind of like taking a breather before I went back at it. And at that exact moment, this jerk from the Watertown Daily Times, or whatever the newspaper was at the time, he's going around taking pictures of how the locals are dealing with the ice storm. And the picture they take is the son of the family that allowed us to stay with them. He's like hacking away at the branches on the ground, and I'm standing overlooking him with my hands on my hips. And my father's like, yep, now everybody knows how lazy you are. It's like, you know what, shut up.
Watching everybody else work.
Yeah, exactly.
Have that guy go after you with a claw hammer. Anyway. He lunged. That's great. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, it's a. I have to talk about that. Joe, did I ever tell you those stories about my brief year as a general contractor?
I don't think so.
Oh, oh boy, are you in for a treat? Are the listeners in for a treat?
I don't know. You might be overselling it, but yeah, those are some. That was quite the year I had there working with those guys. I won't say the names, but
tell the story about the van. Let's just do that one. That one's pretty good.
Wait, well, how many stories?
This one I have heard, but I want
to
hear it.
I think the listeners need to hear the story about the airborne van.
Oh goodness! All right, so I graduated from high school in 1999. At the time, this is a preface, just to give you a backstory. I don't know if it helps with the story or not, but I figure I'd tell anyway. So I wasn't completely serious about my college post high school life or whatever. So I kind of looked a little bit, but again, I wasn't too serious about it. So by the time I graduated, it's like, there's no college I really seriously applied to. So what am I going to do? So, at the time, this contractor was attending a church that myself and Justin were going to. And I remember, junior year in high school, he let me work with him for about a week or two, so maybe he might need some extra help. So I reached out to him. He's like, yeah, come out. You can. I'm sure we have stuff for you to do. So I'm assuming he thought I was going to work with him for maybe a month at most. So some like temporary amount of time, but eventually led to like a year or so before I went to college, a year after I graduated. So I learned a lot. Manual labor kind of does that to you and stuff, but there was this one particular time where it was three of us. There was the main guy was the oldest, and he lived, I don't know how far out of like the city of Watertown, but he lived, I'd say like 15, 20 miles outside of Watertown, maybe. I don't want to say that the name of the town, just
that's fine. That works. Names. That works.
Yeah. Let's say 15 miles outside of Watertown, this guy lived. And, the second guy who the story will focus more on, he drove the work van, but he put it upon himself to be the overseer or like the driver of his van, even though like the main guy owned it. He just kind of like, well, I need to get around, I'll just drive it. So it just kind of like, it was just his. So there was this one time, around the winter time, I'd say, he picked me up first. And I was picked up, we were driving to where the main guy lived at, and then from there we would pick up some tools, supplies, whatever, and then we'd go off to whatever site we were going to work on that day. And so, mind you, to give you an idea of like upstate New York, when it's pretty cold, you get black ice. Black ice tends to build on the roads often up there, especially like in the outskirts of like the city of Watertown. And by city of Watertown, I don't mean like New York City. Like if you were to take Yankee Stadium, let's say, you can take the population of Watertown, put all those people in the stadium, and still have seats left over. So
30,000.
Yeah,
right. But that's metropolitan. It's a very spread out area. Just so we have.
Yeah, it is. I think I think all the area is like 150, but like the actual city is like 30. It's pretty small town America.
Yeah.
That is.
I prefer, I call it small city America, but anyway, go ahead.
Agreed.
So imagine that, and we're going outside of that, so a lot of farmland, a lot of, like, houses are maybe, like, miles apart and stuff. We're driving to the main guy's house, big, like, farmland fields where they're growing, corn or whatever type of crop, whatever. We're driving on the curved part of this sideways T that, and, and again, this guy, he proclaimed himself to be the driver of this work van. And it's a manual work truck, Ford Econ line, whatever that truck line is. I think it was a Ford Econ line. The dude was driving a manual truck as if it was stick shift. And he was driving a lot faster than he really needed to be driving this truck van thing. And mind you, there's black ice on this road. So as we're approaching this curve on this road, he's going too fast and he starts jackknifing. And I was like, dude, what the hell are you doing? And he goes, hang on. And he couldn't control a jackknife, so we flew off the road, and I swear, we're in the air for like 10, 15 seconds. It felt like 5 hours, man. We're floating. It felt like a Calvin and Hobbes comic strip. And we're floating, and it felt like it was a scene from The Matrix where everything just froze, and I just heard complete silence, and everything was just kind of going in slow motion up until like the last second of impact, and then everything just kind of sped up to normal speed. And we just crashed into this field, and all the tools and everything were flying all over the place. And I just heard this big, giant crash. And when I finally gathered myself, I realized, man, I'm freaking alive. This is great. And I look over to the guy driving, and this, mind you, this guy is, like, horrendously obese. Like, not to talk negative about obese people, but this guy... He did not care about his size. Like he
or his
so
smell.
Unhealthy.
He smelled terrible.
Yeah, he was not punctual about his hygiene.
Yeah. Just making his own gravy.
Exactly. Yeah, like literally, like probably between his leg, his arms, okay. And stuff.
Anyway,
so he's the one driving. I'd say he's like. Earthquake size, if you want to talk like wrestlers, but without the muscle. And we crash, and I come to, and I look around and realize I'm alive. And I turn, look at him to see if he's alive. And he's like hunched over, his head's over the wheel. And then he sits up, and he looks at me and goes, oh, I think I broke my back. And then he probably like hops out of the van and just starts hobbling away to like the closest house. And, and I finally get out of the van, and he's like, he leaves this trail through like this cornfield to this house that I don't think he even knows who lives there. He just assumed I'm just gonna go in anywhere. And he went in there. He's like, yeah, I gotta contact this guy. Just let me in. I need to call him. We just had an accident. I think I broke my back. And I'm like, wait, you broke your back and you're walking. What's going on with you, man?
tell us what happened to the seat.
Oh well. His seat, because of his weight, let's just say the main guy had to have the seat, the driver's seat, resoldered onto the base of the van.
They had to have it welded.
Completely, like,
in the meantime, they used strap ties to hold it together.
Yeah. Yeah, like, and they claim it was industrial strength, but no. It broke through that, man. It was completely, like, it was completely off the base of the floor of the van. And on top of that, like the running board. Sorry, I can't think of the term. He broke that off too, man. Like that had to get re-welded too.
You get a rock. That entire he rocks thing was the re-welded. Van. He like rocks the van. Yeah. Probably grabs the steering wheel as leverage. And you know, no, the funny thing, he would shift that thing. He treated it like a manual shift. It was a column shift automatic transmission. Yeah.
Speaking of the driver wheel, he was so big, he had difficulty reaching like certain parts of his body, so he'd use a steering wheel to scratch certain parts of his body, man.
Very large.
What a freaking character, man.
He has like this very large, like a paunch, you know. Very large upper bow, yes.
Oh, man, but there are times where like, he claimed there were times where he would claim, yo, I was up all night bouncing at this bar. Like,
he would come up with these stories, and you're like, there's no fucking way. You were also running a B-52 bombing run back, and you know, you weren't. No. And Jody and I have worked with people that spin these ridiculous yarn stories, like, oh, I have a, you know. He owns 10% CVS stock or McDonald's stock. He owns 10%. It's like, no, you don't. No, you don't.
This dude's funny enough yarn to make quotes for an entire family, man. This guy has so many stories. Goodness.
The fictitious girlfriends were the creepy. Oh, we won't get into that. But
story for another time. But yeah, yeah,
Jody, we'll cover those off air because they're pretty funny.
That's a Patreon show.
They're upper tier. We just talked about that beforehand. Oh my gosh! For just as little as $1, folks. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Oh, goodness. But yeah, that entire year was an adventure. We think is friggin' entertaining, but so many stories that happened during that time, man. Ugh.
Oh, yeah, good times. I mean, man, wasn't life so much more colorful back in the 90s? It was just, I don't think necessarily it was because of our age. I think it was truly a different time and place where things weren't as easy. But we were in the in-between phase where things were starting to become automated, or technology was getting there, but it wasn't quite there, so you still had your foot in the old days, and it was like, you know what I mean? It was that weird in-between spot. And it was funny because if you really think about it, from a nuts and bolts perspective, vans like that, like a mid to late 80s van, was still considered kind of new, because if it was like an 89 van, it was only like 10 years old, you know? It's just so funny, yo. And, oh yeah, it's got, I remember that particular van, it was like the whole van was like red, and then the sliding door was green with like this really cheesy 80s graphic on it. They went to a scrapyard to find the door, and they didn't even paint it to match.
Yeah, that van was a patchwork. Like, the side door is a different color. Even the back doors, one was white and one was black or something.
Yeah, I saw them parked out. I used to see that van all over Watertown. I saw that van parked outside, like, I saw it parked outside Farmhouse. I saw it parked outside Little Caesars, the Kmart Little Caesars thing nearby. I saw that van. Oh, there he is. Yep, there he is again. Yep, there he is. And it was just really funny. And so I remember I would contact Ponch and say, because Ponch would always come over. And like Jody and I just started being friends. And so we got to a point to where Ponch and Jody would both come over. And you're talking about like 99, 2000, somewhere along there, when you were really working for this guy. And you would tell me, like, I was like, hey, I saw the van. Were you there in the van? Were you with them? And there was a couple of times I saw it, like, you were quote-unquote on the clock. And, you know, he was with this guy, and I could tell Ponch was really just like, later, dude, I don't want to talk about it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy, what a hodgepodge episode. Next episode, I think we got some other topics I want to cover, but really this one was a matter of just, I wanted to just have more of a natural flowing episode now that Jody was able to be on this one, just see how things went, and it would turn out to be really good, and I really love the Comic-Con discussion, the comics discussion, and I think going forward, you know, we're going to do more vintage comic discussions. And, I mean, how can you avoid it with all of the movies coming out and you got the TV shows? And I think the folks are really dig that. At least a lot of the listener base of the show, they know what we're into by now, you know. And I think that would be something fun to do. We get a lot of positive feedback on a lot of our comic discussions. So it won't be the focus of the show, because really this focus is about me. No, I'm just kidding. No. Yeah, it is good. It is good to jump around. And, you know, I really want to have this where we talk, we feel, and everyone feels welcome to talk about things that maybe, just anything that stokes our appreciation of pop culture and things like that. And I will be, once I get the time allotted, I'd like to get some more celebrity guests on here. We had martial arts master Daniel Pacina on here, which I thought was a truly honorable thing to have him on here. He's like a childhood video game hero for me. He was Sub-Zero on the Mortal Kombat arcade games, and to have him, I'm still reeling from that. It was a lot of fun. And
and Johnny Cage too.
And Johnny Don't Cage forget. And Scorpion and Smoke and yeah, Reptile, man. I mean, it's all, that guy lives that, and it's so cool, you know?
He was one of the foot soldiers in the Ninja Turtle movie.
That was, no, he was not.
I thought he was.
No, he was not actually on that. I asked him that question on the show, so go back and listen to him. He had a friend, okay. I think he had a friend of his, or he knew someone that was on there, and I think he was giving him some martial arts advice or something like that. But no, he wasn't actually on that one, if I recall, because I did ask him that. That was one of the questions that you had me ask him. Anyway, so yeah, guys, that's we got us a lot of things in the pipes coming down down. And Jody, I hope that you can make it on some future episodes. I know things are busy with the summertime, but you know what I would like to do next episode? I would like to talk about state fairs. And I want to hear,
oh my gosh,
I want to hear about
state fairs or county fairs.
State fairs are, well, let's do county fairs. Those are the juicy ones.
Oh.
And we're gonna do I want to hear some stories from Jody. And Ponch, I know you don't go to a lot of county fairs because you're in New York City these days, but you know, what's that?
Those things scared me when I lived up in Wiretown, man. Like,
oh yeah, it's not for the faint of heart.
North Country carnies and stuff, man. No, I don't want no part of that at all.
Jody and I were hardy folk. We went to them every summer. We never missed them. It's entertainment.
I just went yesterday.
Yeah, and so let's harness that train of thought, and let's really. I sound like Jerry Springer when I said that. Anyway, so we will have. I want Jody. I want to talk about. I want to talk about county fairs and state fairs, and because I think back when we went to those, they had a lot of card booths and comic books and things like that. So I want to hear about some of your guys' experiences with maybe some summertime activities like that. But maybe we're going to do that because it's the season for that right now. So I'd like to mention a few podcasts right now that I'm really digging, and they're supporters of this show. We have the Fireside Chat podcast with Ryan McCormick. He's cranking out regular content, so check him out. He's a really funny guy. I'm in contact with him. You know, we're messaging each other back and forth, and you know, we get along really well. I want to get him back on here. I know I keep saying that, but it's going to happen. And then we have the McSauce podcast. They're huge supporters of us as well, if I can talk right. And those guys, man, I think they're doing, an episode a week? I mean, they're full tilt. So they do comic reviews. They do movie reviews, comic book movie reviews. A lot of dueling back and forth. They're just really entertaining guys. Check them out, Ian, Paul, and Matt. We have the Element of Surprise podcast with Chadwick Sewitt. And he's more like a recent a podcast that I started listening to. He's got some great stuff on there. And you can catch him on Facebook. He does a lot of interaction with the listeners of his show, asking for suggestions. And he's got this really cool thing called Topic Roulette, which I really think is really cool. And very creative way of doing a show. And he's always surprising me with some of the mechanisms he has for generating listener interest. So definitely check him out. And you know, there's one podcast, the guy doesn't know I exist, but he's a podcast over in, I think he's based out of London, but it's the Unexplained podcast with Howard Hughes. That is his real name. He's got I kind of cherry pick some of his guests on there. He's got a wide range of guests on there. He even had Elon Musk on there, and he had, wow, Jesse Ventura on there. If you guys check his back catalog on there, he's got some really neat guests. Some of them are nutcases, and after he's had them on the show, he's probably advised them to get some professional help. But you could definitely check out some really cool episodes there. There's some, when Jesse Ventura was on there, that was pretty cool. Because he's Mr. Conspiracy Theorist, so anything with Jesse Ventura, I'm entertained by. So
everybody knows that Iran-Contra was in league with the Viet Cong. Everybody knows. It's common knowledge. Just look at the documents. Everybody knows.
I'm off the grid.
He likes to go trout fishing.
Yeah, I'm off the grid.
Ronald Reagan had a personal suite in Ho Chi Minh City. Everybody knows that. Look at the documents.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. So The Unexplained is his podcast. You can check that out. And so, yeah, guys, that's who I've got in the the little network that we've got building around here. And I'm going to be branching out some more and contacting some other folks. I have a huge Twitter feed that I'm a member of, and it's got actually has some filmmakers in there. There's one guy he actually worked on. Brookside Films. His name's Simon Naylor. He's on there, and he does these Masters of the Universe fan polls for casting. And I regularly participate in those. Those are really cool. Those are a lot of fun. And shout out to him because he's a cool guy. Well, he's worked on, I'm trying to remember what TV show he worked on. Oh, Trailer Park Boys. He was involved with, Jody's going to tell you, he's involved, he did an worked on an episode of Trailer Park Boys, which I thought was funny because I started talking about the Mustard Tiger, you know. And I just found it out a few days ago. And then we have a Twitter follower. He was the guy, oh boy. You know what? I'm not even going to say it because I don't remember his name. I don't want to sound like a moron. So next episode I'll bring it up. But anyway, guys, thank you for listening so much. Jody, thank you. Welcome back. And please, you know, we want to get you back on here as much as we can because you bring a lot to the table. And Ponch, I'm so glad that you are a regular guest on here, a regular host, whatever you guys want to call yourselves. You're my friends. I don't really go by titles. So I'm just glad you guys were able to make it to the show. You guys had a lot to the show. You helped make the show possible. And I wanted to say that with both of you guys on here. I don't take it for granted. I'm, from the bottom of my heart, guys, I am so thankful to have you guys on this show.
Well, thanks, buddy. It was fun. We had a lot of fun tonight.
Yeah, it's man. A lot of common ground, and it really is. People really enjoy the dialogue, so, yeah. So, yeah, guys, thanks so much, and have a great weekend, and we'll catch you next time.